Broadcasting from the super-secret underground bunker at World Headquarters, this is Sci-Fi For Me Radio.
The second season for Beauty and the Beast, everybody is really anticipating it. There's a lot of chatter on Twitter about it. And I know Leslie is looking forward to the second season. Once baby number four arrives and we actually put her back to work, then she's going to be doing that for us, and I know she's excited about that. And there are quite a good number of people who have been reading her recaps, and sharing with it on Twitter. And for that, we thank you, everybody. So I think we want to circle back around to Tuesday night,
okay?
Because of stuff. Wednesday we get Revolution. Second season or third season? What season are we on for?
Second season.
Yeah.
I think it's okay. Second.
So, yeah. Let's see. TV.com. They're making a prediction. Revolution will improve big time, but it won't help it get a season three.
Ooh. I will back that, probably, because
they've got a new writing staff. Mm-hmm. Rockne O'Bannon. I haven't had my coffee today. He's on the staff now, mm-hmm. along with Ben Edlund from Supernatural. And apparently they're on there. All right, so there's new writers this time. And, TV.com has seen the pilot, the premiere for season two. And they say it's a lot better than what we saw in season mm-hmm. one. I personally never really got into this show because I am tired of seeing the dystopian future. I'm tired of the crumbling buildings. I'm tired of the blasted lands. I'm tired of the scorched earth. I'm tired of seeing every single show assume that disaster lurks around the corner. I want a TV show that, like the old Star Trek, where it's a little bit more optimistic and we're going to be able to actually work together and we're going to get the flying car and the hoverboard and, Jaws 32 directed by Max Spielberg. I want that.
You are just upset you don't have a jetpack yet.
That's true.
Okay.
That's true.
Well, but okay, but here's the thing. Even Star Trek, the original series, had the eugenics wars. Even they had their great horrible wars in the past.
But it was in the past.
Yeah, but the thing
is... It was past. But we weren't living in that.
All these dystopian futures, those dystopian futures are not very far in the future.
They're in between.
Yeah, so I think... But at the same time, the whole idea of that kind of storytelling is to basically say, no matter how bad it is, these people will overcome it, right? And... So you've got...
I'll give it to you with reservations.
Well, but it also gives you a chance to tell the worst kind of villains, show the worst kind of villains, because, of course, there's always going to be those folks who, apparently, in most fiction, becomes the horrible, evil warlord type.
Dorothy must die.
Dorothy must die. but at the same time, there's always the folks who rise up against them and try and rebuild society and rebuild the future. The idea of those things is often, not always, the road, anyone, are often about hope. And some of the best stories are the ones where the hope is misplaced, and they're very tragic stories because they're some of the best written, maybe. But, yeah, I mean, but that storytelling isn't going to go away. You're stuck with it. I'm sorry. It's going to be around for a long time.
I wouldn't mind so much if there was other things, but... Every single show.
You want some variety.
I want some variety. I want some of
the
shows.
Okay, how many dystopian shows do we have right now?
Defiance. Mm-kay. Revolution.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Under the Dome.
Under the Dome. Well, I don't know. That's kind of. Walking Dead.
Three.
That can count. What else?
It's actually a fair number for any kind of
programming. Well, if you get into movies, Children of Men, Gattaca. how many movies you've just
described two extremely well-written and well-made films
worth
watching over and over again.
All I'm saying is that I'm tired of seeing the dystopian future and I want to see something else. I want to see a different kind of science fiction show that shows us a different kind of future. Dystopian futures are okay in moderation. It's like anything else. It's like fast food. And it's the difference between, McDonald's and... steak and ale. I want variety
in
my futures.
But nobody wanted to watch Enterprise.
Well, I'm not saying Enterprise will stick it out.
No, but the thing is about Enterprise is that it was an actual attempt to show the beginnings of the first long-range space program of building an intergalactic community. Okay,
and if they hadn't made it a Star Trek show, I think it would have done a lot better.
Well, maybe someone will do that again soon. We'll get something that we're basically showing our mankind's first steps out of the solar system. I think that'd be a very cool show to do.
I think so.
And incredibly expensive to do. So
I would be interested to see after, because Europa Report is now out on DVDs.
Which I can highly recommend.
And then you've got Gravity.
Which I really want
to
see.
And I think the technology is getting to the point, you know, because how far out are we from Apollo 13? The technology, I think, is getting easier for us to tell those kinds of stories where, you know, at some point, a TV show about the beginnings of interstellar exploration might be more possible.
Well, that'd be great.
But it's not going to happen this fall season. Let's talk about whatever.
But we digress.
Nope.
We do that a lot on this show.
Dan keeps trying to jump in, and we keep cutting him off. Speak it.
Well, most of the time you're way. By the time I speak, you're way off on another tangent. But you're talking about the dystopian thing. Way back when, like between the '60s to early '80s, you had a lot of the, you know, positive future. We're going to do all this technology. Buck Rogers, all this type of thing. But it's, I think we've had the dystopian thing over 30 years. I mean, ever since Blade Runner.
Well, Mad Max.
Mad Max. Yeah. I mean, it's the late '70s. You know, and so, yeah, it's almost become a kind of a go-to
tradition thing.
Everybody wants something. They want the action. They want the technology, but they also want the drama. And so they just immediately go for the deserted wasteland or whatever, the post-apocalyptic thing. Because it almost seems like a cop-out to me.
It is.
You mentioned the big villains. Mm-hmm. I mean, look at comic books, you know, Marvel, DC from '60s, '70s, they had the big villains. You know, you had, you know, Buck Rogers, all these others had their big villains every now and again. And
sure.
You could do that in a positive future. You don't need to go dystopian to get that.
You know, I think if the last thing on dystopia is maybe we should say here is that I think we still lag behind the British. Who were doing dystopian stuff in the '50s and '60s?
Yeah,
and they were doing it. I don't think any of us have really touched 1984 or Brave New World or
Fahrenheit 451
or the first Day of the Triffids or any of that stuff where they were, especially there. You know, they were doing live TV versions of this stuff, and they were, you know, traumatizing their audiences in the '50s and '60s. We're still catching up,
and I think that is something that we need to talk about on another podcast, because that is probably a good 2-hour discussion in and of itself. Just talking about futures.
Moving on.
Arrow season 2 kicks off with City of Heroes. They're going to start introducing more characters than they already have from the first season. First season, we got Deathstroke, we got Deadshot, we got China White, we got Huntress, we've got the beginnings of Speedy,
the beginnings of Black Canary,
and there is going to be a Black Canary-ish type character starting in season 2, but it's not going to be Laurel.
Well, that's because someone seems to be coming back from the dead.
Spoilers.
It's in the previews.
They don't say who it is in the previews.
No, but I'm pretty.
No, Mark Pedowitz.
There's been quite a bit out there about this, actually. Though, so.
And this is a PR thing that, you know, a lesson on what not to do. When the president of your network gives away a major plot point,
not good,
Mr. Pedowitz. Call for you from the PR department on line 3.
Was it deliberate?
They're not happy. I don't think it was.
I think he
just spouted off and just said, "Oh, it's so-and-so." You know, we're not going to give away here just in case anybody really cares about that kind of thing. But I'm wondering how they're going to do it, for one. Because, you know, they've hinted at it already because of that. And it's kind of interesting. You have a conversation and you just completely hide three things, you know, three or four parts of that you can't talk about. But it is going to be interesting. I'm really hoping that the fact that Summer Glau has been added to the cast doesn't kill the show. You want to say something. I can see it. You want to say something.
I do. I still miss Alphas.
Oh, yes.
And it's so unfair to her. She's a very fine actress, and she does a, she does so much genre work.
She's
extremely
talented.
But she goes into genre shows, and genre shows, we all know this, is that even if they're on the Sci-Fi Channel, if they don't catch on, they're gone.
Yeah.
We all love a genre that is. We're so happy there's so much on this fall, but we know it goes in waves. That there's times because some of this stuff just it's on the air. And Firefly is gone before full season's even done.
Well, you know, and I think the problem, the challenge, I guess we'll say, because we want to use positive words in our speaking. The challenge is for genre shows. There's a difference between hard science fiction shows and shows like The Event or what was that other one where they woke up 24 hours later?
Flash Forward.
Where it's not really a science fiction show, but there's a science fiction MacGuffin in the middle of it to kind of throw in there. Mm-hmm. I just binge-watched Siberia because I get this email saying, hey, do you want to interview the star? She's co-executive producer and the season finale's coming up. And I'm like, this was a reality show. I don't want to watch this. But I go on to IMDb and it says it's science fiction. It's like, what? And you get these shows that are a completely different genre, action show, procedural, and there's a science fiction element in it, and that makes it sci-fi. And I think you're seeing a lot more of the blurred lines between an actual science fiction show, which is not going to bring in a lot of viewers because it's a niche genre. That's one of the reasons why sci-fi is doing what they're doing, you know, with all of the other programming. And you get a bigger audience with a regular quote-unquote show that has a science fiction element.
Oh, I don't think it's a bad thing.
No, and I'm not saying it's a bad thing. And I think that's probably what we're going to see with Arrow because, you know, now that they're introducing Barry Allen... And we've got Tyrell Rothery coming in as Jean Loring, who's Ray Palmer's ex-wife, and we know who Ray Palmer is, the Atom. I think there's going to be a little bit more of an acceptance of the science fiction elements, the genre elements, if you will, of the overall DC universe. And I think that goes toward what we were talking about earlier is the possibility that DC and Warner Brothers could be using the TV shows to introduce various characters before bringing them up to Justice League. And I think that might be part of what they're doing here.
Well, and it's a lot less risky for them to do it on the TV level than it is to do it on the feature film level.
Sure.
Oh.
Because you can, if you have an episode and you introduce Diana Prince, and half your audience goes, "What?" and the other half goes, "Blink, blink, who?"
Yeah.
You know, maybe you've got a chance to go, "Hey, let's do a Wonder Woman episode, or let's do an Aquaman episode, or let's do, you know," and it's a lot. You're not risking $200, $250, $300 million on Superman 3 or two films into a new Batman cycle. You know, I mean, that's a lot of money to potentially lose if the film doesn't do well, but it's a lot less to lose on a TV show.
Well, that's
and true. And you got more flexibility. Again, we come back to the 22 episode storytelling versus that in a 2-hour episode.
And if it works, you can do some audience building.
Yep. So, and well, I think that could be a good model for DC, who is not, you know, but
well, and so I think From here forward, I think we're looking at the TV series as the farm teams. And
it's a very good analogy.
It's a good analogy because you've got, you know, because you've got a lot of young actors, because the guy that they've picked for Barry Allen.
Mm-hmm. He's from Glee.
Extremely young. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's a lot younger than I expected him to be. The fact that he's not blonde is not bothering me so much, but, you know.
He could become blonde.
That's an easy fix. But the fact that he's so young.
Not always
but of
a
course,
good
then
one.
I have to remember, CW, young and pretty, And that, I think, is playing into that. But I think also you get somebody that young, you've got some longevity built into it, because if they get the Flash brought to pilot, brought to series, you're probably, three or four seasons in before we're into Justice League, and by that time he's going to be in his 30s,
yeah,
maybe. So, yeah, it kind of works out that way.
Well, introducing the character on the television level really isn't new for DC, because keep in mind, Harley Quinn was originally a character on the Batman animated series, yep. And the character just caught on, and now she's one of the biggest characters in DC Universe. Well, became.
Well, remember that Stephen, is it Amell?
I think
he's 32.
Yeah,
and so I mean, he doesn't necessarily read as 32 on camera, but he's, he looks younger than he is. So I think some of these characters have a lot of longevity built into them.
I think so.
We're not talking at all about the animated stuff out this season, are we?
No.
That stuff started earlier.
Yeah, because that's a whole nother
podcast.
I'll just throw it. I haven't watched Hulk Agents of Smash yet, because it doesn't actually appeal to me, and I'm going to have to break down and do it, because it could actually be really good. But I'm actually really impressed with Beware the Batman.
You know, I've seen that a couple of times, and I'm thinking it's not a bad show.
It's not. It's actually written really well, and the voice work is extremely good.
And if you stop and consider that particular type of Alfred, and now you couple that with the rumor that Zack Snyder is interested in Timothy Dalton to play Alfred.
Yeah, but that's such a rumor. Like, I mean, that's such a pie in the sky. Who knows? But still, it would be great.
You got James Bond as Alfred Pennyworth, and, and that makes you wonder, is if Beware the Batman is their new 52 animated show.
But I don't even think so. What's curious to me about this, and this will be a very short digression, because we are digressing from our original topic here, but
quite a bit.
But at the same time, it is a fall series. Is the fact that, I mean, Alfred has been a ex-soldier before. Yeah. I mean, this is not a version of the character.
Frank Miller did it.
Well, I don't think this is a New 52 at all. This doesn't feel like New 52 at all. This is actually feels a lot more like Batman Year 2. Actually, it's Batman Year 5, I guess, is the subtext, is that he's been doing this for a few years, and this is now he's just finally coming into his own as the crime fighter he needs to be.
Right.
Only without the Robins. But at the same time, it's the animation style is a little curious sometimes, but I'm just surprisingly well written. I'm not going to even go call it anywhere close to the original Batman animated series.
No.
But I'm going to say that it's the of the series since, it's probably the best written.
And I'm going to go on record saying I miss Bruce Timm.
Well, we all miss Bruce Timm.
We all miss Bruce Timm.
Oh,
Bruce
God, Timm. Yes.
Come back, please.
Yeah, we do.
Well, Paul Dini moved over to Marvel.
Please.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, half of DC's creative teams moved over to Marvel.
Yeah.
The other half went to Image.
So anyway, next television show.
Once Upon a Time in Wonderland. We touched on this a little bit, so we're not going to get too much into it. But it's a limited series. Original characters, not from the other show. The only real reason that I want to watch it is because John Lithgow is playing the White Rabbit.
Ooh.
I'm like, ooh.
Nice.
Yeah, that's a good reason.
Yeah.
Which is great in theory. Who doesn't love John Lithgow? However, if you've seen the previews, the White Rabbit is a terribly done thing, and I saw some early stuff at Comic-Con, I don't know. It looks pretty awful at this point. So I'm hopeful because go ahead.
Well, I think some of the early stuff, I don't know if that was because I've seen some preview pieces of it. I'm wondering if all of the effects were completely finished, because there's a couple of things that I saw that looked a little not quite refined. First 20 minutes of the show of the pilot. And I'm thinking, okay, but it's like anything. Once upon a time, every now and again, your effects are going to be a little dodgy.
Promos they want to push it before it's still in post.
Every now and again?
Every now and again. Now, sometimes they nail it. Sometimes they get some really good effects work going.
For as much green screen
I know,
work
they
that
do
show
a
is,
lot of it.
The longest time I've ever seen anything that much of a green screen show was Sanctuary, which was a 96-97% green screen show.
Right. And it was done pretty well.
Yeah.
And actually, you know, given the fact that the technology was just coming into its own,
it's been picked up for syndication. It's going to be syndicated on somebody's releasing it through syndication this fall.
Really?
It's not new episodes. It's the first run. But I'd be real surprised considering that its production costs are actually fairly low, all things considered, that it may come back. It just won't be sci-fi.
Well, given the fact that it started as a web series.
Well, and that it's not produced by a studio. It's produced by that production company. So it could come. It's something like that. Or something else like that. But if something like Sanctuary hadn't come along, I don't think we would see something like Once Upon a Time.
No, probably not.
Because it was a good model to follow.
Yeah, because Sanctuary proved it could be done. And then Once Upon a Time and Wonderland now is taking that premise, that technology premise, and just really running with it.
And every year it gets better.
It gets better, and there's some stuff. Some of it is pretty impressive. Mm-hmm. Some of it, not so much. But it's like anything else. I mean, I think sometimes we get into this, and this could be a thing where you're talking about the difference between CGI and models. And Star Wars is a good example of this, where too much, I think people put too much into the CG to make it look real, and it goes past that point of looking photorealistic, and then it becomes CG. You can actually tell that it's CG. It's too clean, it's too precise, it's too perfect. Or there's something that triggers subconsciously that you know it's not real.
Also, when you go CG over practicals, a lot of times you'll get the computer artists basically saying, "Look what we can do," you know, they push it to another extreme that it shouldn't go.
Well, but you know, there's. Yes, in Man of Steel, and that there's some really, really good CG work in Man of Steel at times, too.
There is.
But more importantly, I think that when Jurassic Park came out, Steven Spielberg talked about the fact that the original computer models of the dinosaurs, and people forget how much practical dinosaur effects were in that film. There's a lot of practical effects. But a lot of the CG dinosaurs, they had to dirty them up because they didn't look real. They were too sharp. They were too clean. So they actually made them slightly blurry so that our eyes would sit there, because we see that too crisp, too clean thing, and we reject it because we don't see that way.
Well, wasn't the movie shot on actual film at that time?
Oh, yeah, it was shot on film.
I think so. So then if you've got that contrasted with CG work, the film is going to have that richer, softer look to it.
Sure, but they were really finding that just that the hard, the computer-generated things were gorgeous.
Yeah.
But you put them in those real environments, and they were too clean. They were too sharp. They were too crisp.
I find it ironic that we've spent so much time and money and research into digital technology, only to filter it and affect it to the point where it looks like film.
Yes. We've had almost 100 years of programming. You know,
film looks better.
Well, of course, film. Yes, film does look better. But the thing is that we've been told it looks better, and we've been raised to believe it looks better, and I actually believe it does look better because all of us sitting around this table and we have five filmmakers too. Yes. We know what it's like to look at film and digital, and we know there are positives and and negatives to both. But at the same time, the advantage of digital means we get to, especially in this genre, you know, with the science fiction, with the stuff that we want to see. We want to see those giant spaceships and those new worlds and those amazing alien creatures.
Yeah.
It's easier to do that now. It is.
It's really hard to go on location when you need a new world.
It is tough. There's only so many quarries you can use.
You simply going
to the new world.
No, they all look like Vancouver, so you go to Vancouver.
What's that?
Vasquez Rocks.
Yeah, here we go.
Yeah, we go to Vasquez Rocks.
And that one quarry that Doctor Who used for 20 years.
Yes. Outside of Cardiff.
Right, but the thing is that you know, we're actually very lucky right now that we're in a time that you can make a TV show, 22 episodes, 24 episodes, that's almost half a year, and you're doing a weekly television show, and your production time is... You know what? Realistically, your production time is probably a month per episode.
I think so. Yes, 6 weeks.
So you're looking at something like that for how much of that time is CG time? And they're putting out stuff. We're getting this stuff as good as we're getting from Once Upon a Time on those TV shows. Yeah. And so you know, when we've got something that is, you know, there was model work certainly in Next Generation, but there was a lot of CG, and that was how long ago?
about 25 years.
What was the cost? What was the cost per episode? Wasn't it 200,000? Was it 200,000 an episode?
Oh, at least that much.
So I mean, and that's in those dollars.
Yeah.
So I mean, so we've got a chance. We're lucky. We're very lucky that we can get these big concept stuff.
Yeah.
And actually, they can do it. The technology exists, so we can see that now. We can have it, and it's not going to take you 6 months to a year to properly do Star Wars or Blade Runner. Or any of these stuff where your real production time on those effects took a really long time.
And there's going to be still the question of whether or not you're going to properly do Star Wars. But although I am encouraged the fact that they're going to do a mix of CG and practical models.
Whole new podcast.
Yes.
Wait. Moving on. You guys are getting off topic
film,
again.
I think the film look
But we digress.
The film look has been more of an expectation nowadays more than anything. Because if you look at Tron Legacy... That kind of started to step away from the film look, especially with a high frame rate.
Well, you could do that because you're of the environment that the story takes place in.
We've been trained. Here's, again, quick digression, very quick. We've been trained because we didn't have, high-definition television didn't exist.
Uh-huh. Right.
We've been trained, our eyes have been trained by standard definition for television, not for movies, but
that's
television.
That's a T-shirt.
There
look
we
for the
go.
Fuzzy.
There
look
we
for
go.
The fuzzy.
So, but you know, the right HDTV, here. HD programming, HD stuff coming out on HD, is still a relatively recent thing for the way that we look at television.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, widescreen TV is a relatively recent thing. Well, how long ago was the 4:3 television frame?
Well, about 2004, 2005 is when they went for the. New standards.
We watched Star Trek: The Next Generation in 4:3.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
What are we watching? What are we watching everything in now?
69.
There we go. It's a big change, and it was really hard to get televisions to be turned into those things. So, it's an interesting time. Moving on.
Also on Thursday night, The Vampire Diaries is coming back. I don't think any of us is watching that.
No.
I don't know. Eric, are you watching Vampire Diaries?
Not the hell no.
Good answer.
Ladies and gentlemen, in the comment section below, we would like to hear your opinions on The Vampire Diaries. And
if you actually watch it.
It's spin-off show.
The Originals, yes, which is going to be on Tuesday nights.
So I think it's incredibly popular. Yes, the five of us are not watching it. That doesn't mean that it's not good. It doesn't mean this means it doesn't happen to appeal to this particular group of people. Dustin? And Molly watch it, don't they? They do their for their reviews. I believe they do.
Yes,
they do.
They
Vampire
are watching
Diaries.
Vampire Diaries and Teen Wolf.
So perhaps we can actually get them to talk on that subject to a podcast in a kind of a crossover between this and their review for Human Show.
We could do that.
So, right. Something to think about.
All right, Friday night. Maya's actually going to get to talk about something.
Yay!
Here. let's start with Dracula. okay, so we got Grimm on NBC coming back for, what is this, third season?
Third season,
wow.
Yes.
Yeah.
Where does the time go? All right, so what are we looking
for? What are we looking at this year?
What are we looking at this year?
This season?
What's going on?
Our main Grimm? Well, yeah, because there's more than one Grimm. But the Grimm that we've been following through the three seasons, Nick, has been zombified. Mm-hmm. So we have the new element of zombies. I was not happy to...
Now, when you say zombified, as in, like, he died?
No, of course, because, see, every episode...
He's cursed, isn't he?
Well, he was infected, if you will. He was infected by a creature that sort of resembles a pufferfish.
Oh, that's
when
right.
he goes into creature form, and he blows. He he's it, spits at his victims. It's really quite lovely.
Voodoo doctor.
Yeah, the voodoo doctor. Yeah. Baron, I can't remember his whole name. Baron something. Anyway, so he's been put in a coffin and he's being taken to Europe. And that's where the...
Oh, is he going back to face the family?
The family. Well, that I mean, we don't know that for sure, okay. But that's what it looks like is going to be happening. And
I heard that they're going to try and use him, is what I had heard. So
I'm
don't know.
Sure.
Well, there's one thing I've liked about the show, and I actually confess I have not seen the last few episodes of last season, and
that's
I'm going to be catching up, is that it's more... The first half of the first season to me was kind of like...
The first season was so uneven.
And then the second half of the season was like, okay, this is better. But the second season was really pretty good.
The second season, I felt like the writing got smoother, meaning that it was more even. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't like up and down one week to the next. And the special effects got better. You guys were talking about special effects. Yeah. The first season, the special effects and the continuity errors just drove me crazy.
I think second season, they figured out what kind of show they wanted to be.
Yeah.
It really feels like they settled into something.
Agreed.
Well, first season, there were different kinds of ways of telling the story, even. You know, the whole... Every show, every series has their own format, their own, you know, way. This is how we do the show. And Grimm, in the first season, one week it would have one kind of look, and they'd have one way of solving the case for that week. And the next week it would look totally different, and it was just uneven, and they would keep introducing storylines and then never follow up on it. It drove me nuts.
But Monroe is still Monroe.
But Monroe,
pretty much the best part of the show. Honestly,
he is.
This is not a slam on the rest of the show. He's just really, really fun to watch.
Oh, he is awesome to watch.
Fantastic! They got the perfect guy for it.
And that's usually
Silas
the case
Mitchell?
On these shows, isn't it? It's usually the case. It's not
the main character.
You never watch the show for the lead anymore. You're watching it for one particular. You've got the breakout actor in these shows, and that's the reason people keep coming back. That's one of the reasons why there were so many episodes centered around Data.
Yeah.
Because he became the breakout star, you know,
right.
Spock
yeah.
the same
Amen.
Way, you know. And it strikes me as kind of one of those things where you almost wonder if sometimes they write these characters looking for the breakout.
Well, but I also think it's a different kind of storytelling because you go back to some of the early stuff, like 60s and 70s and early 80s. There was one main character, and everybody else didn't get any development.
Right.
Yeah.
And now
we're
really seeing
fewer ensembles back then.
So even if you may have a main character, you know, where you've got Nick or Oliver or any of these guys who are in the main character of the show, their secondary cast has really well developed. They've got lives.
Yeah.
And they're, so you, it used to be that you would get like maybe one or two episodes a season where a secondary character, I mean, Buffy used to do this.
Right.
Where you'd get like, you know, it was the Buffy show until it was the Xander show, or it was, you know, I mean, they'd have that, you know, they'd have that little bit where they'd sit there and go, oh, this person gets the highlight, right?
Yeah.
It's a lot more even now, even though, you know, you got these characters who were developed. So I think that something like Grimm, where they've done a really good job of developing all the secondary characters.
Yes. Almost all, yeah. Yeah, there's a few characters that I would still like to see more backstory on them. Sergeant Wu.
Sergeant Wu. Because everybody loves Sergeant Wu.
I want to know more about Sergeant Wu. I think
there's a T-shirt
the
there, too. Everybody loves Sergeant Wu. I'm going to start writing.
Everyone loves Wu.
This has been a presentation of SciFiForMe.com. Copyright 2013 by Flaming Dog Media, LLC. All rights reserved. No portion of this program may be retransmitted without the express written consent of Flaming Dog Media.